this. So I guess I won't leave it at that. And
No. Let's talk about it.
Okay.
I don't know what else to do except say, and I said this yesterday in my post. I think apologies from writers are basically hollow. I mean, the way this business works is that if you're offensive and hurtful, you will not be read, and that's appropriate. You will lose readers, and the way that you apologize to readers is by not being that anymore, and by doing something that's more positive.
Thank you so much for joining me. I have completely run out of time. Thank you for being honest. And your book is historically significant. I think it should be read. I Can't Breathe by Matt Taibbi. Stay tuned, please, for Per Fagerling, who is ready to come into the studio. Thanks again, Matt Taibbi.
Bye-bye.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present David Barsamian, Resistance in the Age of Trump, on Sunday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Journalist, author, and activist David Barsamian will be speaking about the broad coalition in opposition to the Trump administration, which includes activists from a range of causes, progressive Democrats, and concerned Republicans. He'll be reflecting on the core issues at stake today and why so many people from such a range of identities and perspectives are challenging the administration. Again, that's KBOO Presents David Barsamian, Resistance in the Age of Trump, on Sunday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fagerling, and the show is Fight the Empire. 2 weeks ago, my guest was Robert Perry from Consortium News, which is really a very worthwhile source of information. I recommend it highly. But we talked about this, what they call Russiagate. And so this show is a kind of a continuation of that, but we don't have Robert Perry. I'm giving him a rest. He has other interviews to do. But we're going to sort of stay on that topic because I think it just doesn't go away. And as far as Russian plots go, I think we might as well tell you about one that I suspect is that sometime the Russians were able to fly over Washington and sprinkle crazy dust over D.C. because this plot, this sort of conspiracy thinking is going on and on and on. It's very interesting thing to me is that a lot of people, especially on the left, who kind of dismiss what they call conspiracy theories, they really seem wrapped up in this one that the Russians are conspiring in many devious ways to make us look bad. We'll go into that later. Another thing that strikes me is that for a long time, us folks on the left have been complaining about the two-party political system. It's sort of the lesser of two evils dilemma that we're in. We're stuck with the Republicans or the Democrats, and the Republicans predictably come up with some pretty horrible candidates for whatever office you're interested in. And so that means you got to go along with the Democrat because they're not so great. They may be kind of bad also, but they are, quote, the lesser evil. They're not as bad as the scary Republican. Well, this has been traditional in politics now, going on for quite a while. But it seems to me, with Donald Trump on the scene, that this Donald Trump is the worst, scariest boogeyman that's ever been around. So we're willing to, I don't know what kind of Republican we're willing to, warmongering Democrat we're willing to vote for just to vote against Donald Trump. But it's that is a little scary itself. It's just that the lesser evil has gotten so evil, so crazy, that people are really kind of spooked by it. It's amazing. People are so spooked by Donald Trump that they are willing to kind of put up with almost anything that is supposedly against Donald Trump. So having said that, let's say a little more about Robert Perry. He's got this article in Consortium News called Sorting Out the Russia Mess. And he makes a few really very good points. He talks about recently three people were indicted by the Robert Mueller investigation. One of them was this young guy named George Papadopoulos, who was actually only not even 30 years old. Seems to me to be a very eager sort of person, trying to really get his way up the ladder of the Trump supporters. He was actually named to be one of Trump's foreign policy advisors. I think part of that is that the Trump team is so guys keep resigning for one reason or another. Then there's not many people that want to work with Donald Trump. The orange terror doesn't have too much to pick from. Anyway, George Papadopoulos was indicted, accused of lying to the FBI, and which makes him, when you're indicted like that, you know, he has confessed a lot of, he's sort of spilled the beans to the investigators, to Robert Mueller, and this leaves him a little vulnerable. You know, the usual thing you hear is that that the prosecutor will get the truth out of him. But what if the prosecutor is interested in more than just the truth? We will have to see where all this leads to. One thing Robert Perry talks about in the indictment, a certain professor, as far as I can figure out, the deal was that Papadopoulos was eager to get in Trump's, kind of rise in the Trumpian hierarchy. And he had this idea that, that the Russians could give him, quote, dirt on Hillary Clinton. And so I guess in Europe he met somebody called the professor, who, and this is according to Papadopoulos now, according that the professor said that, yeah, he could, that the Russians had a lot of dirt on Hillary and, we could pass it on. Well, the professor turned out to be a fellow named Mifsud, he teaches in England. He denies all this. He says that he did not have any dirt on Hillary and didn't, that, so it's, I guess it's Papadopoulos' word against Mifsud's word, if it ever goes to a trial. But according to Robert Perry, there's really no evidence that the Russians ever offered dirt on Hillary. When you read the indictment and everything written about it, is that the Papadopoulos was so eager to find the dirt that he arranged these meetings. And apparently, as far as I can figure out, the Russians were dangling this bait in front of him. The Russians wanted to talk about the Magnitsky Amendment. This is a thing passed by Congress that puts all sorts of sanctions on the Russians as kind of a punishment for what we claim they did to a fellow named Magnitsky, who was, it's a kind of a long, complicated story, but he died in prison, and he supposedly, well, the Russians claim he died of natural causes, and some of our people claim he was kind of knocked off in one way or another. So the Russians want to get rid of this Magnitsky Amendment, and they were kind of using Papadopoulos. Maybe they really believed he had entree into the higher Trumpian circles. And so a lot of this has to do with these DNC, Democratic National Committee material that was supposedly hacked and revealed to the world. Now, according to Democrats, it was Julian Assange who got this information from the Russians, that the Russians hacked this information and passed it on to Assange, who made it public. Julian Assange denies that he got information from the Russians. And we'll switch a little bit. Ray McGovern, who's this retired CIA agent, he and one of the people in the National Security Agency claim that these DNC leaks could not have been hacked for two reasons. One was that the timing that they were was done on the Eastern Seaboard. So unless the Russians had some sort of operation going on there, it wasn't them. And this gets a little technical, and I don't quite understand it all, is that the velocity of the download shows that it was not a hack, but it was somebody downloaded this information onto a thumb drive, which presumably means that it was somebody within the Democratic National Committee leaked this stuff. And then, according to Robert Perry, one of his intelligence sources says, and seems to me pretty obvious to everybody who follows these things, is that the Russians hacked information from the DNC. That's what intelligence agencies do, ours included. They're hacking like crazy. There's a lot of hacking going on. But this intelligence source questions the idea of leaking, that it doesn't make sense. If you hack some interesting information, say you're one of the Russian hackers, and you find some good juicy information, why reveal it? Maybe it's better to hold on to it. Maybe it's better to reveal it in private to people who are concerned or something like that. There's lots of things you can do with hacked information. And so, and one reason for not revealing it is that when this information was hacked, Donald Trump was not seen as any kind of a viable candidate, and that the smart money was betting on Hillary Clinton to be elected president. So if you were, say, Putin, why would you want to reveal this information damaging to her when it's likely that she's going to become president in a few months, and she'll be rather annoyed at you? So the story of Russian hacking and leaking does not really hold water. So having said that, we're going to go to a little bit of history, our history with the Russians. Uh, Boris Yeltsin, starting around in the early 90s under Boris Yeltsin, the Russians sort of, we sold them a bill of goods, you know, at least our Harvard economists did, that they need to have some economic shock therapy to get their economy going after Soviet mismanagement over the years. And so, you know, these sort of economic whiz kids went to Moscow, and they had some kindred souls among the Russian economists and people in government, and they sort of put over this shock therapy. And what it did, one of the things it did, was that a lot of Russian bureaucrats or people in what they call a nomenklatura were able to sort of take possession of state property, which basically is property of the Russian people. And somehow these guys were able to sell these things cheap to Western buyers, like a fire sale. And so these guys, of course, the Western buyers made out, they made a lot of money because they're getting cheap goods. And these Russian guys made millions, billions. They became what we think of as the oligarchs. Now, there are a lot of oligarchs. I think I looked up in Wikipedia one time, and there's about 100 of them, over 100 of them. And they got rich by all sorts of scams. And you can sort of divide them into, I guess, two classes. There's some of these oligarchs, the Russian economy was really going to hell. It basically it killed a lot of Russians. The economy went crazy. Life expectancy of Russians, especially Russian males, went down by I think about 10 years or so. It was the social consequences of shock therapy were really disastrous. And Yeltsin, he continued as president until, he ran for election in 1996, and he was not considered very likely to get reelected because of the way the economy was going. And so what happened then was that the U.S. sent a team of political operators and money into Russia to help out Boris Yeltsin. And there's no secret about that. The Time magazine even boasted about it. They had a cover story in 1996, Yanks to the Rescue. There was even a Hollywood movie made about this, kind of a comedy called Spinning Boris. And so the U.S., talk about meddling, the U.S. went in with a lot of money and political operators, and they did rescue Boris Yeltsin. He was reelected. And one of the things that they did, I was looking through some of my, I save a lot of newspaper stories, and there was one story about, we're very concerned about Russian advertising on our social media. Well, back in this 96 election, the Russians did some advertising also, or the U.S. did. And the U.S. paid an advertising firm called the Sawyer Miller Group, USAID, paid $6.2 million to the Sawyer Miller Group, and they mounted a big advertising blitz pushing privatization. Well, that is really kind of pretty huge compared to what we are accusing the Russians of doing. We have these stories now how the Russians, the amount that they spent on Facebook and other social media seems really very minor, but Back in the 90s, we were spending over $6 million on advertising in Russia. So for us to complain about the Russians now really seems kind of hypocritical. So that is the main point. I mean, right now I heard this morning, you know, they're holding these hearings about so-called Russian interference in our election, trying to make us look bad. They talked about some kind of an ad. I think I got this straight. Maybe people can call in with more information on this. The number to call is 503-231-8187. Apparently, they spent $200 for some social media ads that got two sides of some issue out in a protest. So whatever you can say about the Russians, they seem to be making their money go a lot further than we do. You say they're getting a big rumble for their rubles. They're causing, according to, this is mainly the Democrats who are saying this, but Republicans too, is that they're causing all sorts of trouble messing around with our elections. Senator Dianne Feinstein calls it the beginning of cyber warfare, which is really pretty horrible. So this is the Washington D.C. seems to really, the crazy dust is taking effects, I believe. If anyone has some observations on that, give us a call, 503-231-8187. And I think we got a call coming right now. Nobody? Okay. Well, let me leave you with one very interesting thing. Talk about crazy dust and weird stuff going on. There was a story a couple weeks ago about supposedly possible sonic warfare in Cuba. And the gist was that people in our embassy were being sort of tormented by sort of strange sounds and that woke them up or kept them from sleeping, and that the U.S. Embassy in Havana was targeted along with a hotel where a lot of Americans stay. And what happened was that finally the Trump administration brought some of these people back to Washington, and in retaliation for not having our people there, we expelled 15 Cubans, you know, out of the sort of tit-for-tat thing going on. Well, it turns out now, and that there's evidence that these so-called sonic attacks were nothing more than crickets. What they did was they managed, they compared the sound print with sonic warfare with crickets, and they really kind of matched. So here this big, huge uproar, which caused people's lives to be, you know, people sent Cuban diplomats back to Havana and brought ours here, was all because of some kind of invasion of crickets. But we do have a caller. Jack is online. Good morning, Jack.
Hi, Per. I heard that same story you did yesterday on National Propaganda Radio.
Mm-hmm.
I heard Al Franken there flummoxing over over the Russian meddling in the elections on by buying $200 Facebook ads, and the two groups that were set up, the two counter groups, the faux counter groups that were set mm-hmm. up to sow chaos and confusion in the American electorate and process. And the first thing I thought when I heard that was COINTELPRO.
Well, that's certainly something to think about. Yeah.
Yeah, and analysts who I follow claim COINTELPRO never went away.
Okay.
And, Mueller was in charge of the FBI.
Oh, okay.
During 9/11, at 9/11 and before then, and they were tracking all these guys, and somehow or other they, you know, slipped through their net.
Okay.
Somehow or other.
Well, you made a good point. Hey.
People like Al Franken and so forth, all these people who are flummoxing over this thing, and these are people who claimed the Bush regime lied to them about everything
right.
except 9/11.
Hey, let me say you made a real good point, and we will pursue this, but I got a couple other callers lined up, so I'd like to thank you very much for that. Boris Online, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes.
About meddling in others' elections, we could talk about Kermit Roosevelt going to Iran and mucking with...
All right. Well, that was more than an election. They actually removed an elected president.
And so the U.S. and the U.S. has destabilized election processes in South America. That's pretty well known. And, funding an advertising campaign is a little bit different, generally speaking, than making covert Facebook, you know, plants to stir up the populace. Or maybe it's not. I mean, I don't know how the advertising was handled in Russia. And,
well,
and
do we really know? As far as I know, it's possible to make you can put a Facebook ad or something like that in, and you can make it look like it came from Russia. I don't know all the technology of that, but I've heard that said that there's really no solid evidence that the Russians did. It could have been all sorts of people putting these ads on Facebook.
Well, I think that they've got a pretty decent trail now that has linked, you know, specific Russian schools of craft.
Well, I'm waiting to see the evidence. That could be. I'm not ruling it out. I'm just waiting to see the evidence, you know. Supposedly, what I've seen so far is a lot of people claiming this, and okay.
I'm with you about, you know, supporting McGovern's work and saying that, you know, it wasn't a hack of information, but a download from somebody or another internally.
And all that information was true, by the way. The information that was revealed, it was not lies. It was true stuff about Hillary Clinton's speeches and Podesta's connections and a bunch of other stuff. So,
agreed. You know, but the specific rattles in the firmament right now about Russian-backed shenanigans.
Well, we will
are damaging.
Yeah, I don't want to cut you off, but I got a couple other calls I'm going to try and get in. But we made a point, and we're going to keep an eye on this and see where all this leads. You know, so thank you very much for your call. John is on the line. Good morning, John.
Hi there. Thanks for doing this. Really quickly, you were talking about that it was probably on a thumb drive. What that indicates is that it needed physical media present at the computer from which it was downloaded.
Right.
The bandwidth that provides means that you can download it much more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it kind of like so if you're doing it over the internet, let's use a plumbing metaphor. You've got a pipe that comes in, and the pressure that you have will be limited by the size of the pipe.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing for the bandwidth on the internet. That is the forensic evidence that indicates that it could not have been a hack and that it was an inside job. Of course, the name Seth Rich, who was murdered.
Well, you know, I've seen the information on Seth Rich, and I'm not ruling it out.
I'm not ruling it out either. I'm just putting it out there. And
right.
Julian Assange offered a $20,000 reward for information leading to finding out who actually killed him.
Okay. Well, you know, we've got a lot to keep our eye on here, don't we?
We do.
Okay.
And thank you for bringing up the VIPS people, because that's what people should look at. We need to remember that those were the same intelligence professionals that advised against invading Iraq in 2003 because mm-hmm. they said that the intelligence was faulty.
Right. Okay. I think we're going to try and get.
There you go.
One more call. No, I guess we can't. Okay, I guess we're going to have to wrap it up. This has been an interesting topic, and it's just one that just doesn't seem to die. So we obviously will be keeping our eyes and ears open on all this. My feeling is right now I am not ruling anything out, but it would be nice to have some real solid evidence. So anyway, thank you for listening. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia on KBOO. It's your radio station.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Muertos PDX 9th annual Dia de los Muertos celebration on November 2nd at noon at Adios Cinema in Portland. Muertos PDX will be hosting its annual Dia de los Muertos celebration with musical performances, a children's story time, Calavera decorating stations, mariachi, Katrina's traditional Mexican cuisine, and much more. A portion of this year's proceeds will benefit Oregon por Mexico for earthquake relief in Mexico. Again, that's Muertos PDX 9th annual Dia de los Muertos celebration on November 2nd at noon at Adios Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under community events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Big Waters Falling Up Tour, Tuesday, November 14th at 8 p.m. at the Paris Theater in Portland. Portland locals Big Water will be closing out their Falling Up Tour, featuring special guest Danielle Betancourt on the violin. Big Water will also be sponsoring a feeding for houseless people through AMA Global Care.